So welcome everyone for coming. Before we get into our Dharma talk discussion, why don't we spend a few moments just doing loving kindness meditation. It's good exercise for our hearts. Traditionally in Buddhism, the heart that we're cultivating, often when you read about Buddhism, it's more about the meditation and the wisdom side of things. But the heart, and again, we're just really kind of dividing it up where there really is no division between the heart and the mind, because an open mind is an open heart. Open heart is an open mind. They're really the same. But it really means that we want in our relationships, which means everything, because in a certain way we are relating to everything, but at least for human beings, for starters, we'd like to be able to offer in sort of an undiscriminating way friendship. We're not talking deep love, but just the qualities of friendship. And you know, as individuals, we have the capacity of being friendly with people, even people that in other circumstances we may not like, right? In other words, we may have friends that we really like, and they may have their idiosyncratic behaviors, they may have certain quirks. They may not be nice to everybody, right? But yet they are our friends, so we look upon them with kindness, and we're very understanding and forgiving. Right? We have that capacity. And again, we often have that capacity simply because we call them friends. When we call them enemies, we don't have any forgiveness for them. We don't cut them any slack. Right? But when we call them friends, we are much more willing to see them in the best light possible. So that's a good way to be with pretty much most people. But we go through life in fairly narrow ways. So we practice this loving kindness meditation just to begin to open things up. So just close your eyes a second. And there are many ways of doing it. Sometimes we do it. Let's do kind of a simple one tonight. And so loving kindness in a certain means, we just want good things for people. So why don't you begin by imagining, visualizing people closest to you, family, people you live with, children, parents, brothers, sisters, loved ones. Bring them to mind, and as you see them, say to them in your mind, may you be happy. But again, don't say it like just an affirmation or like words, but say it like you mean it, like you want them to be happy. May you be happy. May you be free of suffering. May you be free of ill health. You know, I'll just say et cetera. Et cetera means the good wishes you want for anybody you care about. So in your mind, bring first your family. And again, sometimes we don't have the greatest relationship with our family. But still, we can wish them well. We can wish them to be happy, not to suffer. We could wish them to be free of illness and disease and hardship. So begin with loved ones, people you're close with. And then begin to bring to mind people you're friendly with, friends. And again, see them very individually and really say it to them. I want you to be happy. I really want you to be free of your suffering. I want you to be healthy in mind and body. I want goodness in your life. So say it to your friends as you see each of them. And again, say it like you really mean it, like you really want it. And then bring to mind acquaintances. Maybe people you work with or you're somehow involved in. They're really not friends. They're really not even acquaintances. They're kind of people we may nod to. But now stop and look at them. And when you see them, say to them, I want you to be happy. I really wish that your life could be free of all suffering. I wish your mind could be at peace, free of all emotional afflictions, difficulties. I wish only good things for you in your life. So send this energy of loving kindness to people you kind of have a nodding acquaintance to. And next, let's pick some strangers. Now, these are people we just pass in the street, we pass in stores. We don't have a nodding acquaintance with them. We're really indifferent to them. But now bring some people to mind like that. They might have been in the car next to you or something, seated next to the bus, things like that. And look at them. And with your heart open, wish for their happiness. May you be happy. May you be free of suffering, difficulty, emotional afflictions. May your body be healthy and free of disease. So pick up some just absolute strangers. You could pick somebody here tonight you've never seen before. And all of a sudden you stop and you look at them and you send them that energy of friendship, of loving kindness. You smile at them. You wish them well. And then maybe move on to somebody, not somebody you hate, but somebody you kind of don't like. Not like a big deal, but just kind of you don't hit it off with them. You're just going to just don't. They're a little bit on your negative side, but not big. But just you kind of have a little bit of a dislike for them. Just a little thing about them, and bring them to mind, and again look at them, and say to them, "May you be happy. May you be free of suffering, difficulty. And may you be free of disease and sickness. And may your mind be free of emotional afflictions. May you be at peace." And in this way, send the energy and the good thoughts of loving kindness to people that we have a slight dislike for. Something about them maybe rubs us a little bit the wrong way. But now we stop and we connect with them. And we see them as human beings and we wish them well. And finally, bring to mind someone that you dislike, really. Or you might even hate them. Someone when they come to mind, there's a strong negativity toward them. You really don't like this person, and you probably think you have good reasons not to. Again, look at them like you looked at all the others as a human being. And for the moment, setting aside your personal story with them, wish them well. May you be happy. May you be free of suffering, difficulty. May your mind be free of all the emotional afflictions. May you know happiness, well-being in your life. Send that energy to them. And then finally, come back to yourself and see yourself sitting in front of you, standing in front of you. Again, as you're looking upon a good friend, hopefully, not someone you're indifferent to, not somebody you have a negative relationship with. But when you see yourself, look upon yourself as a good friend and say to yourself, may I be happy. And again, say it like you really you mean it, that you want yourself to be happy. May I be free of suffering. May I be free of all the delusive notions that cause me suffering. May my body be healthy and may I take good care of it. May I listen deeply to the deepest inspirations and aspirations of my heart. And may I honor that which is truest in me. And may I live accordingly. And then just let the meditation dissolve and just rest a moment. We could say, in your open-heartedness. And just feel what that's like to have a heart that can extend itself in all directions to everyone equally, offering friendship, kindness. Just feel what it's like to have that kind of heart. And maybe we could even spend a moment just imagining what that might be like if we took that home with us. Took it home, took it to work, drove around with it, shopped with it. And that it really became our everyday heart. So thank you for doing that practice together. This practice, loving-kindness practice, I recommend that you make it part of your everyday meditation practice. Whatever you do when you're on your cushion or wherever you meditate, it's also good to do this practice of loving-kindness. And also, if you go through the day and you find that you are kind of indifferent to the people you encounter. You know, many of us either we kind of go through our day kind of lost in our own personal drama, our own personal to-do list, or, you know, things we want to accomplish. We often we're not really present to the people we encounter. Even in stores or driving about, we don't kind of acknowledge that these are fellow human beings that we're encountering. So it's good if we find that we have kind of gone into kind of some kind of automatic pilot life, that we stop and even as you're driving about or going in the store, somebody's ringing you up at Publix or something, to look upon that person with the heart of loving kindness and look upon them as a fellow human being. And you could even, in your mind, say to yourself, and again, there's no law against saying it right to them. be interesting to see how some stranger might respond to you if you said, I hope you're happy in your life. I hope there's not a lot of suffering. It might start an interesting conversation. But anyhow, it's good to do that. And it's also good if we find that we are getting, if we're angry at somebody, or we're pissed off, or, to stop. And send them a little loving kindness. It's hard to be angry at somebody at the same time you're doing loving kindness meditation for them. It's, you know, they're sort of contradictory mind states. Because again, when we get angry or something, we get very fixated on an incident or just an aspect of that human being. Right, and we forget that they are more than that incident. They are more than that behavior, and so doing the loving kindness meditation kind of puts things back in perspective. Again, as I said earlier, with our friends we are forgiving, aren't we? We are understanding. Oh, they probably didn't really mean it, or they're having a bad day, or they had a rough childhood, or they're going through a hard time. You know what I mean? We'll go to any extent to excuse them. Why? Because they're our friend. We care about them, and we care about the relationship, and we want to understand them, right? It's kind of simple. So it's a good modus operandi for really how we can be with everyone, right? Try to understand where they're coming from. Try to understand that maybe behind whatever action they did, there is a personal suffering or a personal blind spot. We always think they know better, don't they? We talk this way. They know better. But obviously they don't know better. If they knew better, they wouldn't do it, right? So saying things like they know better, or they should have known better, or is really is kind of making something up in our own head that prevents that or that facilitates or gives us a reason or allows us to what? To get angry at them. And to not be understanding. Because they should have known better. They knew what they were doing, right? They wanted to, but that's not true. Right? I mean, I guess there are people who deliberately go around, like very consciously, trying to hurt other people, right? But, you know, there is none of, I mean, all of us here have done that, haven't we, to others? And a lot of time it's because why? We're suffering, we're hurt, we're angry, or we're indifferent, or we're just projecting, right? And usually it's only afterwards we see the damage we've done, right? So again, I encourage all of us to practice loving kindness. Oh, okay. So before we get back to our teaching, always begin if there are any questions about the meditation practices we've done tonight, if anybody's new or just wants to understand a little how to do. And next, whether anybody has any questions about how to bring the practices of mindfulness and the practices of the Buddha Dharma, the way of the Buddha, into one's life to deal with any situations may be causing you a difficulty or a fixation or obsession or suffering in your life. So if anybody has any questions, please feel free to ask them now of any type. Don't be shy. Just check your mind. Do you have anything going on in your life that haven't been able to, just by yourself, work through, get on top? Yes. David's always a man who's willing to just put himself out there. Good for you.
question about generally just being tired and fatigued, usually near the end of the day, and that's when things tend to slip, you know, become angrier easily, more easily, and just a little less aware, and I'm not sure, it's just a time when it's hard to keep the practice going.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's any bag of tricks that you may have.
So the question, quite simply, is when I'm tired, and today tired, I tend to regress a little bit in my humanity. I'm a little more short-tempered, I'm a little more quick, I'm a little more, et cetera, et cetera. Anything in the bag of tricks? Obviously, get a good night's sleep, David, but as your mother would probably say, get a good night's sleep. Eat good meals, and you know. Again, you know, I think the question often is, you know, what am I, you know, what's really tiring me? You know, because a lot of the stress, you know, that which is called stress, is really more mental fatigue than physical fatigue. These days less and less are people engaged in a livelihood of hard physical work. Many of us, obviously some people have the good fortune of still doing that, but many people have just a lot of mental work that tires them out. Right? And that can be dealt with. Because much of what stresses us is our reaction or our resistance to what we're doing. Right? It's not the work itself. It's the drama that we create around the work and the psychological, emotional resistance we have to what's going on. And often that's tiring. We could say from a Zen point of view, how does one work? One works, one can say, mindlessly. Mindlessly meaning that one's just totally absorbed in whatever one's doing. Right? You know that when you're doing something that you're really absorbed in, it's interesting. One loses a sense of time, right? You go, gee, I can't believe 3 hours have passed. It seems like I just started. Now, why is that? Because we've been absorbed. We've been involved, right? We haven't been half-hearted. We haven't been, you know, here but there. We haven't been resisting. So, you know, the best way to be involved in work is to be totally involved, totally present, right? And a lot of that time, that type of involvement at work is, I think, often energizing rather than tiring. But again, you know, I mean, if we're really exhausted, physically exhausted, that's one thing. But we know a lot of our tiredness at the end of the day is situational, because I'm sure I'm not alone, but a lot of times, you know, you finish up your work day, you feel tired, right? The last thing you want to do is, let's say, work out or do something physical, right? And yet you find that if you can put aside that thought and do something more active or stimulating, you actually end up feeling what? Energized. It's funny, isn't it? Because we start out going, I'm just too tired. All I can do is what? Veg out. Right? I'm too tired to do anything. I just got to veg out on the couch. Or nowadays, people veg out in front of the computer, you know, and spend a few mindless hours surfing about or, you know, couch potato. And then what? Do you feel energized? No. So again, I would say do something that energizes you. You know, a lot of times, I think this has a lot to do with coming out of unconscious living and coming into conscious living, is, I mean, conscious living is, you know, what's good for you. Right? You know what's good for you. And so you make your decisions in life based on what you know is good for you. rather than what? Than how you feel at the moment. Because how you feel at the moment, or how we feel at the moment, is usually just a, is based on our conditioning, which means how we feel on the moment is based on how we have been. Right? I think you'll find that. So it's really just historical conditioning that is creating me to respond in this moment this way. And let's say, historically my conditioning is laziness. I'm not saying you, but where I'm lazy. Right? When I'm tired, I just kind of, sit myself down on the couch. Take good care of myself. Like that. But we know that it's not really taking good care of myself, because what my body really needs is to be energized. Right? And if I've been sitting all day or working in a way that's very repetitive, probably doing things that open me and stretch me and, is what's good for me. Right? And so when you make decisions based on what's good for you rather than from your historical way, you feel better also. In the same way with food. Right? Or just other kinds of things. When we are making... when we talk about earlier, it really sort of ties in with loving kindness. Right? Because if it was a good friend, we'd say, well, you'd probably be best to just exercise. I know you don't feel like it, you're tired, but it'd probably be best for you to go exercise. Right? We are very wise, aren't we, with our friends? I mean, we have a capacity of giving excellent advice and having deep insight. But when it comes to ourselves, we're just like, blind. Now, there are good reasons why we're blind to ourselves. But the bottom line is, it's like it's like if you want to develop a daily meditation practice, right? And most people, I guess especially among a group like this, would say, yeah, it'd probably be good for me to meditate daily, right? My life would be better, my mind would be better, I'd be calmer, It's probably good for me to meditate for all kinds of good reasons, right? Every day. Well, you would think then if you know something is good for you, you would what? You'd put it into your daily life, right? The same way you put other things into your daily life. So every day, I'm going to get up to do this and this, and I'm going to meditate, or I'll meditate here. You put it in and you make a daily commitment to it. But a lot of people don't do that. You know what they do? They base it on how they're feeling in the moment. Right? Unfortunately, our feelings arise conditioned by the past. And in the past, most of us were not daily meditators, were we? So if we practice our meditation based on how we're feeling in the moment, you may find, and maybe there's some people here who are finding that their meditation practice is very irregular. Right? It's because we're living from our conditioning. Our conditioned self that we've carried along with us from the past is not big time into change. Right? Our conditioned self is conditioned to do it the way it's always done it. Even if it doesn't create goodness in our life, or even if it creates suffering in our life. So, so if you're running around with a self that's a little immature, right, and doesn't always do what's best for itself, right? And you have to be a good parent, right, to that child, right? Talk to them up to a certain point. But at a certain point, you just have to set limits on them, right? Yeah, I don't care how you feel, you're going to go meditate, right? We do that with our children, don't we? because as parents, we often believe we know what's best for our child, but at least legally we have that type of authority to a certain age. And hopefully we do not misuse our authority. But sometimes we just have to tell our children, you have to go do, you have to do your homework now. But now we're all grown up, right? So we think we can watch TV and then do our homework. But we know with children, if you say, you can go watch TV, you can go play and do your homework later, the child will never do the homework, will they? Some will. A lot of them won't. You have to say what? Homework, then TV. Good psychology. It probably works well with us. So again, please make sure that the tiredness at the end of the day isn't somewhat self-induced. But again, if it's not, if it's just, you do kind of work which is fatiguing, again, it'd probably be good to energize yourself, whether you feel like it or not, because you know it's good for you. And again, the hope is we return to things over time that make us feel good. In the beginning, we have to kind of take ourselves a little by the ear to the meditation cushion or to the exercise class or yoga. You know what I'm saying? But hopefully over time, when we really get it, how much better I feel when I do this on a regular basis, it no longer is a struggle. But it's the same way with eating. People try to reduce the junk food, they eat, this, eat healthier food, better food. Reduce stimulants, things like that. Again, my sense is if you pay attention to how you feel, not just in the moment, but over time, you'll be convinced by your own, again, felt experience what's really good for you. Any other questions? Yes.
Hi, I'm Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
That internal dialogue, the constant chatter that happens when you're fearful or worried about something, or overly concerned about something, and it can be so consuming that it completely takes you out of the present, out of the moment, from being completely present.
Right.
You don't have the patience and the tolerance for what's going on out there.
Right. So therefore?
And it completely takes you away from the practice of loving kindness, not just to other people, but to yourself. And being able to turn that off and kind of give yourself a break.
So is there a question, or are you just saying that? What's the question, Michelle?
How do you find ways to, I know the meditation.
Okay, so let's
turn that off and be more present.
Mm-hmm. So the question is kind of what's called in Buddhism emotionally afflictive states, such as fear, worry, anger, resentment. When we get into them, have a life of their own. They circle about with greater frequency and intensity. And over time, we get more and more caught up in them. And they take us further and further away from the present, as well as take us into the world of emotional afflictions. Right? So the question is, how can I reduce that? Yeah. That's a good question, and that's certainly germane to what we're doing here, right? Now, obviously, mindfulness meditation is very helpful. Okay, not in the sense that we may think of it, which is, well, if I'm present to what I'm doing and absorbed in what I'm doing and don't get lost in stories, therefore I won't get into anxiety and anger and things like that. But it's not that simple. Because even though living so in the present moment, being more mindful in one's life is certainly beneficial, for most people there is still operating within their minds, consciousness, something called a self. Right? And that self, that I, that Fred or that Michelle, is looking out on the world and picking and choosing the situations that arise and seeing things a lot of the time through always through the prism of self, right? And when that self thinks about something that may be going to happen in the future, that may not turn out the way they want, or they don't think they can handle, or something like that, that self begins a process of worry. On the other hand, if that self thinks that somebody did something to them, or said something to them, or didn't say something to them, or should have said something to them, or, right? It'll get a little angry, resentful, right? And then that story will increase. So that's kind of an occupational hazard of having a self and living from it. Now, obviously, Buddhism has a lot to say about self and non-self. But let's just stick at the level of mindfulness, right? So please understand that when we talk about mindfulness, it's not just mindfulness when I'm brushing my teeth, mindfulness when I'm drinking tea, mindfulness when I'm eating, right? Some people think that's what the practice of mindfulness is about. Mindfulness means I'm present to whatever is arising, right? And when you are scared, worried, angry, resentful, in the present moment, that emotion is arising in you, right? In this moment, in my body, I feel what's called anger. When I look in my mind, I'm aware that I have thoughts which are called angry thoughts. That's the practice of mindfulness. So mindfulness of emotions, mindfulness of thoughts is very important. You know, some people, they read a few books on mindfulness and they think it's just about drinking tea, walking, breathing, again, which is all good stuff, right? But it's also mindfulness of emotions and mindfulness of thoughts. Right? And when these things are arising in you, right, if you can see them and even say, I am aware that there's anger in me now. I am aware that there's fear in me now. Right? And you just stop and you're just open to that experience. You're not trying to get rid of it. You're not saying it's bad, but you're not indulging it. Because there's something very interesting happens in that moment. Right? Because, Michelle, when you are not mindful, like you said, you get swept away by the fear, by the worry, by the anger, by the resentment. You're swept away and you're just in it. And I think for many people, their emotional life is very much like an ebb tide, whatever they, you know, where they kind of picks you up and...
A tsunami.
No, not a tsunami, nothing that big. What? You know, it's... What? No, just so when you go to the beach, you know, an ebb tide... Undertow, that's it. You know, like an undertow, right? Tsunami is a little... Right. Yeah, hopefully our emotional life is not like having tsunamis running through. Or cyclones or anything. But like a riptide or an ebb tide, where all of a sudden, or an undertow, where you're just kind of pulled... And you know when you're pulled by the neptide, all you can do, or riptide, is you can just go with it until it drops you off the other side. And many people, their emotional life is like that, right? when they get angry, when they get sad, when they get scared, the emotion takes them over, and it just pulls them until it drops them off someplace. You know, a half an hour later, an hour later, 3 days later, all of a sudden it's like you come back. Oh, you know, you come out of the dream of whatever anger, resentment, fear you were obsessing about. Mindfulness is a way of not getting swept away, right? Because when you're swept away, you are totally in it, right? But if you can say and see and be aware, I am aware there's anger in my body, in my mind. Can you see? You're now observing. Because if I say, I see you, right? Then there's obviously something over here. Well, actually there isn't, but relatively, we will say, you know what I mean? I'm aware of you. And then I'm aware also over here there's me, right? So there's some distance, right? That allows me to see you and to see how you're doing, or, you know what I mean, to make some observations about you, all right? So in the same way, when we can stop, key word, stop, right? And be mindful of what's arising in our mind and body, name it, claim it, right? And then what? Well, it may not be that easy, right? Sometimes you can let it go, right? Sometimes you can just let it go. You can see it and go, oh, it's nonsense, or I'm just making it up, or making a big deal of nothing, or how do I know the person really meant that? Or, you know, sometimes we can let it go, or just by letting go. But sometimes we can't, right? Let it go. But we can what? We can take care of it. Right? We can calm it. I mean, and people say, "Well, how do you do that?" To me, it's the way if you have a young child, right? And if they're angry, as young children can be, if they're scared, if they're sad. I mean, young children have the capacity of being emotions very strong, right? They get very strong emotions. And what does a parent or a older brother or sister or a mentor or a big brother, what do they do? You just hold them and you what? And you calm them down. Everything's all right, it's okay, right? And what happens? The child, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, but very quickly will calm down, won't they? Right. So that capacity to stop, to be mindful of what's arising, and then to take care of that emotion that is, that part of us, we could say, that's an affliction, that's suffering. And just take care. It's all right. So it's interesting. I only say that because I would say many of us, or most of us, have that capacity to calm or soothe or stabilize other people. Right? Children, family, friends, you know, when they're upset. We have that capacity to do that for them. And yet we often don't realize that that's what we can do for ourselves, or think that, you know, I don't know how to do that. But we do know how to do that. It just seems a little strange to us because we're not used to doing it. We don't have that kind of relationship with our own suffering, the way we may have relationship with the suffering of friends and family, right? And that's kind of strange, isn't it? That we would have this relationship with others and know how to take care of them, or how to be there for them, to calm them, soothe them, stabilize them, reassure them, right? Counsel them. But when it comes to ourselves, all we can do is just go with it until it, runs its course, or until we've done enough damage that we finally realize what we're doing, right? And we kind of come back, whew, I gotta get a handle on myself. Right? Is that clear? So, please understand that mindfulness of feelings, mindfulness of thoughts, is also a practice of mindfulness. It also means I am living in the present. I am aware what is arising in me. And I can stop, and I can take care of those parts of me that are wounded in this moment. And again, over time, you will develop a relationship with yourself which is a good relationship, right? If you have a good relationship with a child or a friend, you probably even have friends or family, you know, when they're upset, they call you because they know what. Yeah, that you're somebody who, you know, can comfort them or quiet them down or, you know, make it. And again, it's not as if you have PhDs in psychology, right? It's not like that, is it? You just have the capacity to listen, to be non-judgmental, right? And to care that they're suffering and want to help them. So, and then again, so that's one whole level, which is, I think, a very key direct level. Again, the other area is to just look at the whole issue of self. It is very hard to get angry without a self. Try it sometime. You know, it's very hard to be worried without a strong sense of I. So looking into the role of self and I and me in these situations of strong emotional intensity is also, I think, important. And to look at the whole quality of attachment. You know, we hear a lot in Buddhist teaching that a lot of the causes of our suffering comes from our strong attachments and our strong aversions, right? Which means there's a self, there's a me, there's a Fred who wants certain things and does not want other things, right? And when things happen that he wants, he does what? He grabs onto, right? And when things arise that he doesn't want, he does what? Pushes away. There's probably a lot of that going on in our emotional life. Because take anger. I mean, a lot of our anger is around what? Things aren't going our way. Right? People aren't saying the things they're supposed to say. They must have forgotten their script today. I forgot to give them their lines this morning. Right? They're just acting the way they want. Unbelievable. I thought I was the only one allowed to do that. So, look at the self. Look at strongly held beliefs, expectations, strong attachments and aversion. Strong attachment, my way, my ideas, my happiness, central. Your happiness, less central. Right? My happiness, my well-being, most important. Your happiness, your well-being, less important, not important at all. Right? I mean, it's very wonderful to be able to step back and watch the self create its world, of which it is the central character. It is the hero and the heroine of each of our stories. Right? And that is fine. There is no problem with that if we lived alone on an island. We could have the biggest ego in the world. We could be totally narcissistic, self-centered, only care about ourselves. But so what? It's only me on this island. Right? But there's a problem in this life. And that's all of you. All of you got on my island. And I'm still operating as if this is my island, and right? Can you see? And that's our problem. Right? So let's say they're 30, 35. You know, it's hard for us to go, I'm just 1/35th of this. Why do I act as if, you know, I'm like 95% of this? Right? I'm just 1/35th, you know. If I'm in relationship with somebody, it's only 50% about me. That's hard for us to, you know, that's just math. Right? So how do we, you know, if we're on a team at work with 8 or 10 people, that means we're what? We're only 10%. Right? We think we should be at least what? 85%? 75%. Right? You know, it's very hard for people in this country to realize, you know, they're sharing this country with millions of other people. Right? Who have their own way of seeing things and wanting things, how they think things should be, right? It's just selfishness, isn't it? And blindness to the needs of others. So, lack of mindfulness plays a big role in emotional afflictions, but a strong self that doesn't acknowledge interconnection, interbeing, his unwillingness to see with equality the suffering of others. At least equal to mine. So part of the practice of meditation, of calming and clearing, is so that we can see more clearly what is causing suffering in our life and in the life of those around us. Right? So we can see more clearly. We're not always blinded by you know, endless distractions and stress, or endless self-talk, right? It's not like it's bad. It just prevents us from seeing clearly. Right? And really then living a life of wholeness, a life of loving-kindness and compassion in all the ways that we really want to live. So again, meditation is not just simply for itself. Right? Meditation in the Buddhist tradition is a practice that facilitates transformation.